I'll Drink to That, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
Are you guys ready to get warmed up? Because I am. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's edition of Cost That Bottle. That's right, we're playing a game show where you guess the cost of that bottle. In our first game tonight, all of our contestants will guess the price of a bottle of wine. Now remember, whoever is closest to the retail price of the bottle without going over will go on to play in our next game. Let's take a second to bring on down some contestants. Linda, come on down. And where are you from, Linda?
From the Outer Banks.
Linda, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for coming down. Who else do we have on the show? Come on down, Eric. Eric.
My name is Eric from Lake Zurich, Illinois.
Illinois, wonderful. Lake Zurich. What's going on in Lake Zurich, Illinois these days?
I haven't lived there in like 20 years, so I don't know. That's where I'm originally from.
Is anything happening there now?
I don't know.
I haven't.
There might be something, but it's...
You left. Did all your friends leave too?
They have, yeah. It's been a long time.
Let's see who else we got. We've got Carly. Carly, come on down.
Hi, my name is Carly. I'm from Chicago.
Nice to have you, Carly. And last but not least, Karen. Karen, what's going on?
Hey, y'all.
Okay, y'all, for tonight's first game, we are going to play Cost That Bottle. Tonight's bottle is a bottle of Arndorfer Grüner Veltliner 2012. This is a Comp Doll Reserve. It's from the Strasser Weinberger Vineyard. Now, contestants, what are your guesses? Can you cost that bottle?
Yes,
you can. All right, Carly's pretty confident about this. Linda, what is your guess?
$17.99.
All right, Linda, you remember, you can't go over the price, but you can come in just under it. $17.99.
Yes, $17.99.
Linda's sticking with $17.99. Carly, what have we got?
$96.99.
Whoa! $96.99. That's an awful lot for a bottle of Grüner Veltliner. Let's.
What do you pay in the city of Chicago?
Carly's thinking in Chicago prices and Chicago dollars. Karen, what do you say?
$50.
$50, also a hefty price for a bottle of Grüner Veltliner. She's going for it. And last but not least, Eric, what is the cost of a bottle of Arndorfer 2012 Grüner Veltliner?
I'm going to go $20.
$20, are you sure? Because you have to come in just under the price.
$19.95.
You're going to go with $19.95. Let's see where we're at. The bottle of Arndorfer Grüner Veltliner is $19.95. Eric guessed it. Eric, you guessed it right on the nose. Wonderful, young man. All right, fantastic.
And now our runner-up, Linda, will blind taste a bottle of wine.
And tell us how much it costs. You must guess a price that is close to the actual retail price without going over it. If you do, you win. A free case of beer!
A whole case! Wow. Okay, so.
A lot more than
let's
one.
Let's see. It's dry. I was going to say 20, but I think maybe that's a little high. How about thinking about $17.99?
Okay, Linda's going to stay with the $17.99. Let's find out what the actual retail price of this wine is. The wine that is in your glass is La Bella Fernanda White Tempranillo. And its actual retail cost is $21.
I won.
Did I win?
You won.
I won. Oh, my God. I get a whole case of beer. Oh, my God.
So the actual retail price was $21.99, and Linda guessed just under that. Way to go, Linda. And now for the final wine case showdown. Our top two winners will compete against each other for the wine case showdown.
Two showcases.
We have two showcases today. Our first showcase is a 12-bottle case of Pinot Grigio.
boy on the beach. Yes. My kind of stuff.
So this is a case of Pinot Grigio to enjoy on the beach, plus a pizza.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Now, Linda, you are our number one winner so far today. Are you going to take this showcase and guess on it, or are you going to guess on the next showcase?
I like that thing on the beach. I'm going to go with this one.
Okay, Linda's sticking with this showcase. Linda, now the only rule is you have to guess the price of this within $250, and you cannot go over the price. So, Linda, how much do you think this case of Pinot Grigio will cost you, plus a pizza?
Oh, man. This is tough. I'm thinking...
$1,000!
Oh, gosh, no. I'm thinking $75. And maybe the pizza, another $80.
$80.
Yeah.
$5 for a pizza. I haven't seen those prices. Maybe with a coupon.
You're trying to sway me. All right, I'll go higher. I'm going to do $95. That's pretty cheap wine, though, isn't it? Yeah. Wait a minute.
Higher.
Okay. Higher. All right. I'm blowing it. $200. How's that?
$200.
I went from what? 60 to 200.
$200. So your final answer is $200 for a case of Pinot Grigio and a pizza to enjoy on the beach.
I don't know how much is in a case.
12 bottles.
Ooh.
Do you want to rethink your answer?
Can I?
Of course.
I have to be below, right?
Yes.
I'm going to stick with my answer.
With which answer?
Oh, how many did I have? I had quite a few, didn't I? $250, is that what I said?
No,
what did I say?
$200.
Oh, let's do $250. I'm going to do $250.
$250?
Yes.
Well, how much would you pay for a bottle of Pinot Grigio?
I have no idea.
Well, think of how much do you pay for a bottle of Pinot Grigio?
Less than that. Well, no, about $9, $10.
Now times that by 12.
What did I say again?
You can't go over.
But 250.
I think you're good.
Yeah, I'm good.
I think you're good.
Can't go over.
Are you sure about this, Linda?
$10 a bottle of wine.
Yeah, times 12.
Times 12 is what? 220.
120.
Oh,
120. Oh, pizza's getting pretty expensive, isn't it? Are you giving me hints here?
I'm just trying to help you out, Linda.
You're giving Eric all these clues.
But he's guessing on a different one.
Yeah, he guessed.
All right. Okay. So I went way too high. All right. I'm gonna do. All right. I'm gonna do 100.
Okay.
We've got it. Linda's final guess is 100.
Yeah. 100.
And this is your final answer.
That's my final answer.
All right, wonderful.
Yeah.
The actual cost of a case of Pinot Grigio plus a pizza is $152.
Wow,
those clues I couldn't miss.
So, Linda, now everything's riding on Eric's guess of the next showcase, because if he wins, everything changes, and we have to have a showdown. Okay, so here we go. What's Eric going to guess? Eric, you are our runner-up today in today's competition, so let's see what we've got for you next. A 12-pack of DRC Romani Conti 1996 3-liter bottles! Woo! That's right, Eric. If you guess this price right, you'll win a case of DRC Romani Conti 3 liters, plus a Coravan!
Woo!
Woo! Now remember, a 3-liter is 4 times the size of a normal bottle of wine. And this is Pinot Noir from France. And a Coravan is a little machine that helps you take wine out of a bottle without popping the cork. Okay, so we've got 12 3-liter bottles of Pinot Noir from France, and we've got a Coravan thrown in there. Now the only rule is that you have to guess the price right within $250 of the actual price without going over. So, what are you thinking, Eric?
So a 12-pack of gigantic bottles of wine.
Yes.
Is that what we're...
That's what's at stake here.
Is that what we're getting at?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's not just any wine.
Where is it from?
It's from France. It's from Burgundy. And it's DRC Romani Conti.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say $800.
$800.
Yeah.
$800 plus the Coravan.
What's a Coravan again?
It's a fancy machine that allows you to take wine out of a bottle without opening the bottle. It's like a little needle that you put in through the cork.
Oh. Cool. What's the advantage of that?
Well, you can drink wine without opening the bottle, and it lasts a really long time afterward.
$2,000.
$2,000. Okay. So Eric's guess for 12 gigantic bottles of DRC Romani Conti 1996 plus a Coravan, the final guess is
$2,000.
All right, he's holding fast at $2,000.
Lower.
Carly's suggesting he guesses lower. Eric, are you going to be swayed by that?
No.
He's not going to be.
You should have seen her throwing a frisbee earlier.
Okay, let's.
Not getting any advice from her.
Now, for the chance to win this amazing prize. Now, the actual retail cost of a case of DRC Romani Conti Magnums plus a Coravan is $840,000. That's right, $840,000. That is some.
The one piece, how much is the piece that lets you take out the wine without opening it?
Oh.
Oh, so that's where that number
comes from. $1,000? I'll take the gadget.
You'll take the gadget. All right, well, now I just want to thank all of my contestants for playing today.
I won! Yay! So I get, what do I get?
You get beer, you get pizza, and you get Pinot Grigio.
There we go.
All right. Thank you all. Thank you to all our contestants. Thank you to Carly. Thank you to Karen. Thank you to Eric, who was our runner-up today. And thank you to Linda, who was our winner. Woo!
Yay!
Who likes the bubbly champers? This guy. And I'll tell you what, I've never been so excited about champagne in general as right now. Small growers doing amazing things, established houses turning out better and better quality bottles. This is a fantastic time to be drinking champagne. Do you know who else likes the champers? Probably you. You probably know all this already and are drinking a lot of bubbles too, because unless I'm missing something, champagne is super popular right now. So what should you know to take your exploration of champagne even further? I suggest you sign up for the upcoming and amazing La Fête de Champagne, a spectacular event that has been organized by the esteemed Peter Leem, who's taught me more about champagne than any other living person, and Daniel Jonas, who is the force behind Le Palais, the famous Burgundy Festival, and also one of the finest sommeliers in the history of that profession. La Fête de Champagne is going to take place in New York City at Astor Center on October 18th. That's coming up pretty soon. And there's going to be a gala dinner by some of the finest chefs that I've ever eaten the food of, including Danielle Ballou, Gunter Seeger, Abraham Brissell, and James Kent. It's going to be a multi-course extravaganza. It's going to be a BYOB champagne festival, and it's going to be spectacular. There will be a number of amazing producers there. Agropar, Beresh, Chartan and Taillé, Delamotte, Dom Perignon, Drapier, Laval, Solos, Jacquesson, Prevost, Krug, Le Mondier Bernier, Roederer, Peters, Duquet, Philippe Onat, Paul Rouget, the list goes on. It includes Geoffroy, Salon, Savard, and Villemar. They're all going to be there. The producers, the chef de cave, will be in the house dining with you. A fantastic opportunity, and it's coming up soon. If you want tickets, reach out to 212-625-2519. Again, 212-625-2519. Or go to the website, lafetdechampagne.com. LAFETEDUCHAMPAGNE.com. You can find more information and tickets. And hey, I got a surprise for you. This guy, Levy Dalton, is going to be hosting a seminar with the chef de cave of Louis Roederer on the same day, October 18th. And if you'd like a ticket for that, there's a few left. It's going to be me, you, and the Chef Ducave of the amazing Louis Roederer House. We're going to be drinking Cristal. It's extremely affordable for what we're going to be drinking, which is back vintage Cristal and also Cristal Rosé. It's $100 for the hour seminar. It's also our first ever live interview for the show. That's right. The first time we're ever going to do one in front of a live audience, just like this show, but we're going to be drinking better wine, is going to be on October 18th at Astor Center under the aegis of La Fête du Champagne. I'm extremely excited. There's a couple seats left for the seminar. Check it out. Louis Roederer Seminar, led by myself. Jean-Baptiste Lecayon of Roederer will also be there. It's going to be phenomenal. We'll see you on the 18th.
Chicago. It has Lakeshore Drive. It has the Cubbies. It has Willis Tower. And now it has 750. That's right. The amazing 750 service is now available in Illinois. And that means that it's powerful and easy-to-use search tools for identifying wholesale pricing, locating trade tastings, saving lists of tasting notes, and much more, including the very excellent tool for processing credit apps, is now a click away for Chicagoland. To celebrate the launch, we here at the show are talking with buyers, distributors, retailers, and sommeliers from the great city of Chicago, and releasing that series of episodes to you. What is going on in the Windy City? You're going to hear it from the people who know. And if you are tuning in from Chicago itself, be sure to give 750 a try. 750.com, it's in Illinois, and it's the future.
Nathan Adams on the show of Red and White Wines. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing today?
Nice to see you. So you were working at restaurants in Atlanta.
Atlanta, Georgia. 96. I moved down there for about 2 years and spent some time in the back of the house, you know, studying with some chefs at a couple of restaurants, and had my share of Atlanta and decided to move back to the Midwest, to Illinois in 97. Moved to Chicago for the first time and began working within 2 weeks of getting here at Brasserie Joe with Jean Joho, an Alsatian restaurant.
Who's a big deal in Chicago chef history.
Yes, yes. And at the time, I think he had Everstrom as well. Brasserie was kind of the younger, cooler, hipper place of the moment, and really got thrown into the world of wine at Brasserie Joe.
But you'd also been doing some traveling before. You'd been to Belgium in...
Yeah, yeah. I think my roots with food and wine started in the kitchens, you know, with my mom, with my aunt, really falling in love with what they were doing, fascinated. And from there, it moved into beer. My brother and I think, tried to trick my father into getting us drunk or making beer for us when we first started in college. So we bought him a home brewing kit, and he took his time, unfortunately for us, to start brewing, but he learned the craft. And first trip to Europe was in 95, and 10 days tasting every day with my father, lots of different beers, and discover the world of lambics and goose, and yeah. So that's, I think, what got me into the drinking realm.
Beyond the standard flavor set.
Sure, sure. Beyond the domestic pilsners and lagers that we know so well.
But in 97, you moved to Chicago and you segued into wine, and you were working kind of as a helper apprentice in a program.
I was. Yeah, I did some management training with and learned some corporate stuff through Let Us Entertain You, which is kind of the head. That was what Brasserie and Everstrom were, the company they were with.
And what was it like working with them?
Well, it was a great experience. It's intense. There are a lot of staff, lots of responsibilities. So I basically was a floor manager for a year and a half, and I was apprenticing under Beth Hetherington,
who's
the GM and wine buyer. She actually is a life partner and a business partner with Mike Corso. And Mike's one of the older gents in the Chicago scene on the importing side. He's been doing that for a long time. But was fascinated. Beth was super passionate, is still super passionate about wine. And the light clicked pretty quickly. You know, we had tastings almost on a daily basis. She would open up wine on staff meetings and management meetings, and I was essentially just thrown in head first into the world of wine.
And eventually you went to Gordon Restaurant.
Yeah, I switched over to Gordon, was tired of the long, super long hours managing, and decided to, I got offered a position to serve at Gordon, which was one of the kind of first tried and true, you know, prior to Michelin stuff in Chicago, a 4-star. We did daily 5-course that changed. I was there when Don Yamauchi was the chef and Michael Gaspard was the sous chef. It was intense, you know, pairing wines with the courses.
Because things were changing a lot.
Yeah, yeah. A great experience, though. And was able to make a bit of loot serving, which was nice and what I kind of wanted at the time. A little less responsibility and more of the passion side and learning more about food and wine and the in the pairing world, too.
But when Brasserie Joe looked for a beverage director later, they reached out to you.
They did. One of the managing partners offered me a position to come back and to oversee the wine program, which I did in 99, 2000, and spent another year there under essentially Chef Joho.
What was he like?
He was a great guy to work with. He's really intense, but he's got like a really funny kind of soft side. A great sense of humor, but everything passed through him. So it was a lot of tastings. I've never tasted with someone that was so quick. We would run through, you know, 10 wines in 2 minutes, like lickety split. But I learned a lot more about regionally specific because the list was, I think, entirely French.
And he had Alsace heritage.
Very heavy. Yes. He's from Alsace and a very heavy list on that side. But it was more bistro wines, whereas Everest, he's got quite a collection there.
Things move on, and you end up meeting Tom McDonald.
Yes. I met Tom McDonald in 2004 and went to work at Webster's Wine Bar in the kitchen. Needed a little respite from the front of the house and decided to spend some time in the back. And it's a really tiny kitchen. Would go in the morning and prep for service and then, you know, run the line at night, essentially may have a helper on the weekends, but smaller kitchen, less food focused, more wine focused.
Kind of a romantic hip happening space.
Yeah. Dark, candle lit, kind of a cave.
On the edges of town kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's actually in a kind of a weird spot in Chicago. It's along the river, more of an industrial area, but was the longest standing wine bar in Chicago. Up until just recent when it actually, I think he just sold the business and
it was there 20 years. You were there in 04, which was about midway through. What was it like then?
Yeah. Great staff. You know, that's actually when I met Jeremy Quinn and some other staff members that I've come across throughout my time in Chicago since then, folks that moved on to open up a Vec restaurant. I was there briefly 4 or 5 months and then was asked to oversee a small neighborhood spot in Lincoln Square to manage the bar and the wine program. And it was really simple.
Also from Tom?
No, actually not from Tom, another restaurant. That came, the other restaurant from Tom was Bluebird in 2007.
So what's Tom like?
Tom's really laid back, by far, I think, the easiest person to work with from an owner standpoint. He essentially relied on staff to do the managing and to make decisions. I think everybody that works at his places has a really good base knowledge of product, of food and wine, and he kind of lets you go from there and make your own decisions.
And there seems to be like a lot of travel involved.
Sure, they do trips. I never got to go on one of those trips, but they do trips at least yearly where they take staff sometimes twice a year to different regions of the world and really immerse and see some great producers and spend some time.
But at some point you started doing a lot of traveling. How did it come about?
One was through my wife, actually, meeting my wife in Chicago and right around 2004, actually. We first started dating when I was at Webster's, and she's from Argentina. So I took my first trip down to South America in 2005 and got to visit some producers in Uruguay. Outside of that, you know, just this recent trip that I've spent over in Europe, it's been pretty much a focus on the shop, on red and white. 2007, I developed the idea with my friend Sean. So we started to create this idea of opening up an organic, kind of a biodynamic wine shop in Chicago. And it took us about a year for him to design and build some of the shelving units.
Because Sean had a carpentry background in his family.
He does, yeah. Craftsman. He does great work. It kind of launched a whole business for him because this was his first build-out. And then he's doing restaurant build-outs now.
Because it was to this day. Like restored barn.
Old barn wood from Wisconsin. Very unique shelving units.
So kind of a restaurant look in a retail space.
Absolutely. And I think that was part of the idea. We had that in mind for the future, that if we ever wanted to expand the business and maybe look for a licensing to pour by the glass and to serve some food.
Which is something you do know.
Yes, yes. Pursuing that at the moment, absolutely. Excited for it. I think it's the shop's been there for 6 years. It'll be 6 years in July. And I think it's time to take that next step. I think retail has been a whole other experience for me because I've mostly just done restaurant work.
But Sean had worked at UVA for about 3 years.
Yeah, Sean spent some time in Brooklyn. Yeah, and moved back to Chicago, and I was ready to pull the trigger and start a business, and he was too, and we collaborated on this idea and came to fruition, and you know, we're here. I actually bought out Sean 2 years ago in May. So I'm the sole partner now at Red and White, and he is doing a lot of GC work, restaurant build-outs. Yeah, and still pursuing the ideals that we had when we opened up the shop, which is relying on, you know, good farmer-focused wines, small production, native yeast, ferments.
How did you get to that place?
I feel that wine is something that we definitely ingest and consume, and I don't know. I think I had a couple wines that opened up my mind. One was an old vintage Agino from La Stopa, and then the other was from Christian Chaussard, Patapon, that I think really opened up my eyes to what the possibilities were with low sulfur intervention and natural farming. Yeah, and we, you know, it's something that we've developed in the first couple years, and I continue to pursue. That's what we focus on at the shop. You know, I think it's a lot of fun for us nowadays because people really have trust and they rely on us to, I think, open up their minds to new things.
So it's in West Bucktown, and that's where you lived?
It's in West Bucktown. I lived in West Bucktown in Ukrainian Village for years until actually 2007. My wife and I purchased a place up in Rogers Park. We have now a 9-year-old. There's a little more space up there. A little less concrete, a little greener.
But why West Bucktown?
Well, I think the area is, it's a pretty trendy neighborhood. Even before we moved in, it's actually changed a lot. Gentrification a touch. It's an old artist community and was pretty divey back in the mid-90s. I used to travel up here to see my brother, and we would go out to bars in the neighborhoods, and it was pretty shady. It has really changed dramatically, and there's a lot of boutique shops in the neighborhood. We're just out of the Six Corners, which is kind of the known area, on Milwaukee towards, we're kind of in between Bucktown and as you're heading into Logan Square, which is kind of the newer, quote-unquote, Brooklyn spot of Chicago.
And you had worked at a couple restaurants in Logan Square, so it was an area you were familiar with.
Sure, yes. And when Bluebird opened in 2007, we had already found the location and were in negotiations to sign the lease. So it was a good move for all of us. I essentially dragged Sean and another friend over to start working at Bluebird while we were building out Red and White. And then, yeah, so it took us a year. We opened about a year after Bluebird Restaurant had opened. And then a couple years later, in 2011, I went to help at Telegraph as well, open up that wine bar, which was...
Going back to help with Tom McDonald.
Yeah, exactly. I still kept working at Bluebird for 4 years after Red and White opened. So I was doing double time.
You're a boomerang restaurant guy.
Well, we, you know, it's...
Every few years.
Just trying to make...
go back and work for that dude you work for.
No, just trying to make ends meet, essentially. Yeah. Just extra income as we're trying to build the business and take as little money as possible out of the new shop. So,
and it seems like the idea from the beginning was relatively small inventory shop as opposed to, say, the big box model that Chicago also has.
Yes, it's definitely the other side. We probably carry 100 to 110 whites and reds, you know, including bubbles. And we do some small amounts of spirits and some small amounts of beer. But yeah, it was always kind of a hand sell idea. No bottle markers, no notes on the shelves. We pretty much have always treated it like a restaurant wine list. Everything's in there because we love it. And yeah, we're there to talk about the wines. So it's a little more interactive, unless you know what you're looking for. And I think people have come to realize they can find very certain things at the shop that they may not be able to find anywhere else in the city. And so we get that crowd that comes in too, that just enjoys industry people that enjoy a day off coming and seeing what we have and what they're going to take home and drink that night.
So it's not a shop that relies on huge selection or on discount pricing, but rather on relationships that are often local.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a great neighborhood base. Our base clientele is in the neighborhood. I think we are trying to reach a bigger crowd. We have reached, I think, national and international. We get some visitors from out of town that come in that know what to expect, what the selection is. So that's fun too, seeing the out-of-towners wanting to come in and get some rare bottles, not expensive, but just things that they may not be able to find in their home market or elsewhere in Chicago.
Because in a way, Chicago's kind of the outpost in the Midwest for fine wine options.
I think so. I think between the East Coast and the West Coast, yes, we get some great stuff here, and it's fun. We have the ability, I think, because it's not the bigger market like New York or like Los Angeles or San Francisco, where we get some older vintages that sometimes are here and they're cellared and they're in good condition that we can tap into.
Because there's not so much local demand for certain things that you're really into and that might fly out the door in, say, New York or San Francisco.
Absolutely.
But kick around the pipeline a little bit longer here.
Yeah, yeah. That maybe only a handful of buyers either know about or are gonna bring into their, you know, onto their wine list or onto their shelves.
But then you have to translate that to the customer.
We do, and we do a lot of tastings at the shop. We love having winemakers in town when we can, you know, when they're traveling. But we also do our own tastings 2 days a week. We open up anywhere from 3 to 5 wines each tasting, and I think that's a great way for us to give the audience an idea of what types of wines we have and what the possibilities are outside of, you know, your normal selections.
Because sometimes people talk about Chicago as a largely new world market and is largely varietal driven. Do you find that as a challenge?
You know, I think when we first opened, we were really hesitant to go full bore, full guns a-blazing. And we did, but we took it easy on how far I think we were going to push the boundaries. I think within a year we realized that base clientele loved what we had and were excited to try new things. And that's, I think, the huge plus for me, is to have people come back over and over and to see, yes, they can go to old favorites. I mean, we're pretty heavy. Obviously, you know, we rely on France quite a bit. It's kind of the base. But then we sell quite a bit of Italian, of German, of Austrian, of Spanish. So it's mostly, you know, European. But we do have a sprinkle of New World varietals and things in there that fit our interests, that are harmonious and balanced and I think are food friendly. Yeah, we still sell a lot of Malbec, for example. We sell a lot of Sauvignon Blanc. It's, you know, the customer base calls for that. And it's not a problem at all. I enjoy that there's such a younger group, a generation of consumers of wine that's coming up. And I think it's fantastic. And, you know, you have to start somewhere. And I think those more widely known varietals are easy for them to come into a shop and say, hey, I'm looking for this. And we can maybe give them an alternative, whether it's the same varietal or something that may share some common traits of that varietal and get them into some native grapes.
How many regular customers does it take to support a small shop that has 150 selections?
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't think I could put a number on that, but I think it's always since day one been a place for people to come in And also let us know, hey, this is what I'm having for dinner tonight. What do you suggest? And that has been since day one. And I really appreciate that. I think it's more of a slow food, slow wine movement, where I think there's the U.S., the workforce, we work a lot of hours in this country and work really long days. And I think it's great to have a base clientele come in and still take the time to go to a specialty shop where, as opposed to, you know, they could get their groceries and their wine or their drinks all in one place to save time. They actually still come in and do that, which I think is super.
Because in Chicago, they sell wine in supermarkets. So.
They do, yes. Unlike in New York City.
Yeah, they don't do
not
that.
Not the case, yeah.
So you're competing with that idea that someone could pick up the Oscar Mayer meat, the Kraft cheese, and...
Or go to, you know, one of the bigger, quote-unquote, organic stores, and where the selection may be a little bit more... There may be a tighter, you know, feel on the selection, so they can find some of the organic wines in those bigger markets, in those bigger grocery markets. So we're always happy that they come to us, and I think part of that's also customer service. I mean, I think that's one trait that goes between retail and restaurant. That's a necessity, and I think that people love.
And what about the BYOB market and? Chicago. I mean, what about people bringing wine to restaurants? Do you see them stopping by retail to pick some up?
Yeah, it's an interesting city. I don't know any other city that has as many BYO restaurants as Chicago and in as big of a market.
Well, probably Philly, but...
Philly, okay. You know, I think part of that has to do with maybe licensing and some of the hoops that you may have to jump through. It also, you know, there's insurance issues. There are a lot of issues from the restaurant side, but... We're blessed with a few in the neighborhood that do some interesting food and that are also really busy. And so that's another angle of people coming in on a nightly basis and saying, hey, I'm going to this restaurant or that restaurant. And we can kind of break down maybe their meal or at least the type of cuisine that they're going to go eat and try to pair stuff.
Do you find yourself stocking wines from regions that are... Like there's a restaurant that's a BYOB in your neighborhood that does Spanish. So you're like, oh, well, it's easier for us to sell Spanish wine then.
Yeah, you know, we have a BYO across the street that's extremely busy. And the one thing that we carry is actually a beer. It's a Costa Rican restaurant. So we have a Costa Rican beer always in the cooler. And we sell a ton of it just simply because, and I think it's the only Costa Rican restaurant in town.
You can sell beer in a wine shop in Chicago.
Yes, we can do that too. So it's spirits, beer, all in the same. It's a retail license, off-premise. Yeah.
And what about spirits? What's that market like for you?
You know, Chicago's the movement with beer and with craft cocktails is still on the uprise. So I think there are a lot of people that are seeking out. There's some great places to go and enjoy some mixology, some cocktails in the city. So I think there's a clientele that wants to come in and experience that at home or at least try it at home. So we carry some local stuff, you know, everything small batch in the liquor department too. You know, sales are obviously less. I mean, wine is kind of king for us at the shop, and then spirits and
spirits.
That's a good one.
That's the next category that's going to really hit the market.
Well, it's already happening, right? I mean, they're mixing beers with cocktails. Yeah, the beer and spirits kind of fall below that. But we move some product and we find some interesting things to put on the shelves, and sometimes they're open and available for folks to try. And yeah.
What about licensing? I mean, was that a difficulty for you guys when you were starting a white retail shop?
I think licensing is always difficult in a major city. It was no more difficult, I don't think, than the next place. You know, you have to run it through your local alderman, your ward, your constituents that are in the neighborhood, and let them know that you're not going to be doing anything. I mean, we don't sell, for example, half pints. You know, we're not that type of shop, or 40 ounces of beer. Just reassuring the neighborhood. And then it just takes time, which I think is normal for anybody in Chicago.
But I don't see a lot of small independent retailers in Chicago. Do you think the deck is stacked against them legislatively? Or?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think there are a handful of kind of small shops in Chicago that may not have the same focus, but are not big box stores. But it is, you're right, it's tiny because we do compete with some bigger stores that have multiple chains throughout the Chicagoland area. I'm not sure why. I think the culture of wine is changing in Chicago in a very positive way. Like I said, I mean, there's a lot of consumption with the younger generations that are interested in wine. And I think that's part of what we try to do at Red and White is change the culture a little bit and let people know that there are other grapes to enjoy out there besides, you know, the really well-known ones that are planted, you know, anywhere in the world.
So it sounds like trying to share with people some of the personal revelations that you had along your way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important, you know, the trust issue. There's got to be a link from the producer to the importer to the distributor to then the retailer or restaurateur. There has to be that trust established. Otherwise, we have nothing to base, you know, our philosophy, our notions on. I mean, we believe in, you know, those farmers that are doing stuff naturally, and, you know, we believe in the importers that are bringing the wines in, and we have to buy from those distributors and rely on them, that they're storing the wines properly, that we get them in good condition, and then we take it from there.
Do you find that younger people are more open to that narrative, or is it all across age groups?
I think the younger people are. I think they're definitely more open, but, you know, we have a clientele that's, I would say, in the mid-30s to mid-40s that also are really excited to be turned on to new things. I think wine, for us, speaks of place of origin. I mean, quality is obviously, you know, the number one thing, but for me, what we try to convey is that wine can take me to a, you know, a specific place, and that's what I love about experiencing, you know, wine with food and with friends is I can be transported, and we try to, you know, we hope that people that enjoy these wines that come in to buy at the shop have that similar feeling.
Are there specific moments you had on travels that really influenced you in that direction where you said, you know, I'd really like to translate this for other people too?
It's always great to go and see the producers actually where the vines are and where they're doing their work. And it's super inspiring. I mean, I just got back from Austria and Italy and Slovenia. And yeah, it's very reassuring to go to those places and to see these specific producers and the effort that is being put into, you know, their land, into their wines. And then, you know, it's inspiring for me to come back and then share that story, share those stories with the clientele.
Are there certain suppliers or certain importers or certain growers that you feel especially close to?
We rely really heavily on a few importers, LDM, you know, Dresner, Savio Suarez, Thies, or Skernick. We do some Jenny and Francois. I love some of those producers. And then there's some local guys here, too, that have started to distribute their own wines. You know, we rely on Candid Wines, which is a younger company. They actually started right around when we did, and they've got a great portfolio, and they're really focused. Robert Hood, we sell a lot of, but that's through the Skernick, you know, from New York. But they're starting to import some really cool stuff on their own, too. You know, Peter Weigant, I love, you know, selling those wines.
But do you think with a smaller selection that you can then actually move some volume of those 150?
Yeah, for sure. And that's the beauty. You know, even if the wines are in such small production and we may not get our hands on a lot, or I have to special order from the importers that are maybe based in New York or in California, I can at least put the order in and then wait, you know, patiently for the wines to show up. And then once they do, we can move, you know, some good amounts. And that's always great. It's always sad, though, too, when the wines are gone and then I have to wait for that next, you know, shipment that may or may not be coming. So
kind of one of the headaches of the small production game.
It is. It is. And, you know, I think these wines also sell, the wines that we're seeking out sell so well in some of the other markets. We just have to bide our time and wait patiently and see what can come through. And, you know, I'm happy in Chicago that there are a few wine buyers that are starting to pick up on these types of wines. And so it helps us to bring in,
because importers,
at least put the
like,
pressure.
Well, there's a few guys, so I'll send a few cases out there.
Yes, exactly, and for to reassure the distributors here too
that the wine's going to move through.
We'll move the wines. Yeah, let's get them into the market and let's let's move the wines.
So what do you think about your peers in Chicago area?
Well, I think, you know, it's a growing movement, and it's a small group of people. And I think Chicago is definitely a food-driven town. So I think there's a little bit of hesitancy to go full bore into the really natural wine side. For me, there's no other way. I mean, that's just what we want to do. And those are the wines that I personally want to sit down and drink. But there is a small movement amongst some buyers, and I think it's picking up some steam. And, you know, there's some great new places opening up seemingly, you know, every month. I mean, there are spots that are opening up, and I think there's more and more of a focus, and also like a younger wine buyer, of a focus on some of these cool small production organically made wines.
So do you think in a way it's being helped along by generational change of the buyers?
I think a bit. I think there has been a lack maybe of like an apprenticeship in Chicago where you're studying with a sommelier or a buyer for an extended amount of time. I think that's changing. I think people are really seeking out work specifically in wine in the city with the thought of learning, you know, quite a bit and seeing what the possibilities are. I mean, so yeah, I think the younger generation is really, really hip to that. Let's spend some time with some folks that really know their stuff. And from there, they can move into certain positions and, yeah, and hopefully change, you know, for the better what we're drinking in Chicago.
But at the same time, you're in your 40s and you're one of the more on the edge of the shops in terms of your selections. So does it take also a certain comfort level with, you know, I'm comfortable with my decisions and myself, and this is what I'm into, and I'm going to support that. Like, does it take also a, you know, in a way that we think of younger generations being more open, but does it also take a certain sense of self-confidence to stick with it?
I think so. I mean, you've got to, you know, it takes a leap of faith to even open up, you know, it doesn't matter, any business. But, you know, for me, it's not a trend. Like, the organic thing is not a trend. It's since day one, we opened, and it will continue to be. Those are the wines. These are the wines that we want to sell. And it's a niche market, I think, in Chicago, more so than the bigger markets. But it's what I want to sell to people. So, yeah, it's not difficult, you know, for me at all. It's not a trend. For me, it's just a way of being. It's a way of living. You know, I want to know where my food comes from. I want to know where my wines come from, too. So
it seems like a very personal relationship. You're not doing a lot of work online, or probably not over the phone. It seems like one by one, people come to the store and you sell them a bottle of wine.
Yeah, I'm probably lacking on that business side. I think it'll come. I think there's room to grow online, and we don't take it's not a lot of backdoor orders where we've got phone calls coming in ordering certain things. I think the mailer and the online growth can be pretty big. I think these first 5 years have been establishing, you know, the brand Red and White and what we're selling. And then we're going to take, you know, I think the second phase is going to be seeking out an on-premise license and pouring by the glass and putting in a small kitchen. And then from there, I think we're going to move into that whole other arena of online and mailers.
In a way, does it seem like what you really want to do is work in a restaurant again? Or
yeah, I think so. I think my roots are there. I think that just the combination of food and wine is it's pretty rooted with me. Yeah, so you know, from a pace standpoint, I think I really enjoy the hustle of restaurant work. Bringing food into Red and White is going to allow me to get back in touch with the kitchen, which I'm excited for. But yeah, I think essentially I'm more of that mindset, that restaurant mindset, where I need to be busy all the time. Not that I'm not busy at the shop, but there is downtime. It's kind of an ebb and flow with a small retail shop.
It's Red Before White at Red and White Wines, and it's Natural Before Wine at the same place because of Nathan Adams. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Levy.
Nathan Adams of Red and White Wines in Chicago. Who likes the bubbly champers? This guy. And I'll tell you what, I've never been so excited about champagne in general as right now. Small growers doing amazing things. Established houses turning out better and better quality bottles. This is a fantastic time to be drinking champagne. Do you know who else likes the champers? Probably you. You probably know all this already and are drinking a lot of bubbles too, because unless I'm missing something, champagne is super popular right now. So what should you know to take your exploration of champagne even further? I suggest you sign up for the upcoming and amazing La Fête de Champagne, a spectacular event that has been organized by the esteemed Peter Leem, who's taught me more about champagne than any other living person, and Daniel Jonas, who was the force behind La Palais, the famous Burgundy Festival, and also one of the finest sommeliers in the history of that profession. La Fête de Champagne is going to take place in New York City at Astor Center on October 18th. That's coming up pretty soon. And there's going to be a gala dinner by some of the finest chefs that I've ever eaten the food of, including Danielle Ballou, Gunter Seeger, Abraham Brissell, and James Kent. It's going to be a multi-course extravaganza. It's going to be a BYOB champagne festival, and it's going to be spectacular. There will be a number of amazing producers there. Agropar, Barèche, Chartant and Taillé, Delamotte, Dom Pérignon, Drapier, Laval, Solos, Jacquesson, Prevost, Krug, Le Mondier Bernier, Roederer, Peters, Duquet, Philippe Onat, Paul Rouget. The list goes on. It includes Geoffroy, Salon, Savard, and Villemar. They're all going to be there. The producers, the chef de cave, will be in the house dining with you. A fantastic opportunity, and it's coming up soon. If you want tickets, reach out to 212-625-2519. Again, 212-625-2519. Or go to the website, lafetdechampagne.com. LafeteDuchampagne.com. You can find more information and tickets. And hey, I got a surprise for you. This guy, Levy Dalton, is going to be hosting a seminar with the chef de cave of Louis Roederer on the same day, October 18th. And if you'd like a ticket for that, there's a few left. It's going to be me, you, and the chef de cave of the amazing Louis Roederer house. We're going to be drinking Cristal. It's extremely affordable for what we're going to be drinking, which is back vintage Cristal and also Cristal Rosé. It's $100 for the hour seminar. It's also our first ever live interview for the show. That's right. The first time we're ever going to do one in front of a live audience, just like this show, but we're going to be drinking better wine, is going to be on October 18th at Astor Center under the aegis of La Fête de Champagne. I'm extremely excited. There's a couple seats left for the seminar. Check it out. Louis Roederer Seminar, led by myself. Jean-Baptiste Lecayon of Roederer will also be there. It's going to be phenomenal. We'll see you on the 18th.
Chicago. It has Lakeshore Drive. It has the Cubbies. It has Willis Tower. And now it has 750. That's right. The amazing 750 service is now available in Illinois. And that means that its powerful and easy-to-use search tools for identifying wholesale pricing, locating trade tastings, saving lists of tasting notes, and much more, including the very excellent tool for processing credit apps, is now a click away for Chicagoland. To celebrate the launch, we here at the show are talking with buyers, distributors, retailers, and sommeliers from the great city of Chicago, and releasing that series of episodes to you. What is going on in the Windy City? You're going to hear it from the people who know. And if you are tuning in from Chicago itself, be sure to give 750 a try. 750.com, it's in Illinois, and it's the future. Thanks for listening. Our road trip to Chicago will continue in the next episode coming up. If you're digging what we're up to, you can always find us on our website, alldrinktothatpod.com, or follow along on Twitter for updates at drinktothatpod. We're also on Facebook, and I take some snazzy pictures on Instagram. If you want to really support the show, please consider a donation of funds to this ridiculously shoestring operation that lives on a wing and a prayer, or just purchase a t-shirt to wear around. You can find the details about how to do so on our website. And if funds aren't at the ready, just leave a nice comment on iTunes. Every little bit helps. Cheers.